Hello, everybody, and welcome to .NET Conf. I believe this is probably the first session that you're watching today. My name is Glenn Condren, and I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET Core team. And today, we are going to talk about getting started with ASP.NET Core 2.0. And so I'm going to talk about a lot of the things that you would see in your kind of program.cs and your startup.cs, which we're going to go through. But I'm not going to spend a great deal of time in the Razor pages, the higher level parts of the stack. So let's get straight to it. Here I have Visual Studio Code. You can do everything I'm going to do in Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac. I'm going to use Visual Studio Code in this instance, and the command line. Although if you're in Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac, you'll have a lot of UI tools that'll let you do a lot of the things that I do on the command line. And I'll try and point that out as we go, and so that you can know what's going on. So first thing we're going to do is I want to learn something about ASP.NET Core, or I want to do a web app. How do I go about that? Well, you come jump in here, look at the .NET new output. If you type .NET new, it lists all of the templates that you can make, all of the project types that you can create. And there's a whole bunch of ASP.NET Core projects in here, right? There's an empty one and a web app with model view controllers and a web app and some Angular and some React and a web API and a whole different one of them. So today I'm going to create a Razor Pages app to demonstrate the things I'm talking about. It doesn't actually matter though. Most of the things I talk about are kind of application, a template kind of agnostic in this case. But since this is the very first talk of the getting started with web, let's talk a little bit about what these are. So with your empty template here, it's going to give you the bare minimum. It'll give you a application that you can run, which will return some text, like a string, to the screen, and that's about it. From there, you can build it up to what you want. So if you really want to kind of build everything up layer by layer yourself, that's the one to go for. However, if you're more interested in the give me a bunch of stuff and then I'll like edit that to be what I want, or I want to learn from that, then you want one of these other templates. And then the web app and web app model view controller are just two different ways of using MVC and ASP.NET Core. Razor Pages is a very page focused model, and there's going to be a talk specifically about that later on. And then model view controller is the way you would have used a lot of ASP.NET previously, before 2.0, and it's just where there is a Razor page and a controller, and they work together. And then Angular and React and React and Redux are more of the sparse single page application style templates, where you have a lot of client side code in the browser talking to your back end application. And then Web API is when you're building that back end, where you want an API that you can get some JSON back and do some things. And I believe Dan Roth, who is on my team, is going to come and talk about Web API specifically next. So I'm going to start with Razor Pages, but I'm mostly going to talk about the lower parts of it. Later on today, there's going to be a Razor Pages talk, and later on today, there's going to be a Web API specific talk. If you don't know anything about kind of the .NET CLI or any of these, or .NET Core or anything like that, you should jump over to the stream now to watch Hanselman and Kathleen Dollard talking about all of that type of stuff, and then jump back and watch this web talk later, and it'll make a lot more sense once you understand some of that. Okay, so let's get going. .NET new Razor. I'm going to type the command for the template that I want that's in this like short name here. So in this case, this is here. And if I type Razor correctly, we'll get a Razor app. Cool. And then now, because this is a kind of beginning started, I think Hanselman called it the beginner day yesterday on the first day of this conf, let's just take a little bit of a tour of the project that you got. This is a, you know, welcome to ASP.NET Core project. Let's take you on a guided tour of what all these things are. So here, I'm in a folder called netconf. So when I did .NET new, it gave me a project and a CS proj called netconf. I assume this is the sort of stuff, the stuff that's in here is the sort of thing that you're going to see in Hanselman's talk about the beginnings of ASP.NET Core. But of .NET Core, but this is just your project file. It has your target framework, it has NuGet packages. Mostly you'll use this to just depend upon things you want to get from NuGet to use. Then your program CS is your the main entry point of your application. It's the thing that runs first all the time in a .NET Core app. And then you have your startup CS, which is part of the configuration of your ASP.NET Core app. We're going to go through both of these files and talk about everything that happens in them later. Your bundle config and your bower.json and your bower.rc are all about the static assets in your project. So they're about Bootstrap, they're about jQuery, they're about jQuery validation, JavaScript, CSS, things like that. When we create your project, have this www root folder. Inside here is where all your static content is going to go. CSS, images, JavaScript, any libraries that you are consuming. In the case of ASP.NET Core, in this ASP.NET Core default template, that's Bootstrap CSS, it's jQuery JavaScript, and the Bower configuration, these Bower files mean that if you delete this lib directory, you could run a Bower restore and it'll come and get those again. Bower is a package manager that lets you go and get like client-side libraries that you want to consume in your application. And then these other folders here are for your stuff, for your images, for your CSS, for your JavaScript, and they'll all be used as your app. Right. And then this pages folder is where your pages go. So this is an index page, and that's going to be the default of your app. Okay, let's zoom out a little bit and get back to the shell, and let's run it. .NET run. So this will give you some idea of what this thing looks like. To kind of help make sense of all those things that you just saw and tie all that together. So when I type .NET run here at the command line, I'm in the directory where my project is, and it started running on this localhost 5000. So if I can command click that, opens up a browser, and look, I have this localhost 5000 URL, and I've got some stuff. I have this carousel, I have a contact page, I have an about page, I have a home page. That's about it. A bunch of links. You can click on these links. They're all designed to kind of help you get started and learn a little bit about ASP.NET Core. So they link to documentation and things like that. Okay, so that's the application. And then if we look around in this index page, you can see like here's the HTML for your carousel. Right, this is my carousel. Okay. Make sense? Now, I'm not going to talk too much about the pages directory because that's mostly Razor pages, and that's where you'll hear about in another talk. I'm also not going to talk much about www.root or static content or those sorts of webisms, just because in this first kind of fundamentals talk, I'm going to talk before that even in the execution of your app, and we're going to start over here in program.cs. So, inside your program main, this static void main. This code is the very first thing that always gets run when you run a .NET Core application. Okay, so when I type .NET run, this is the first line of my application that's going to get executed. And what this line says is go run this build web host method. And this web host method creates a web host, this iWeb host, and returns it. And then I call run on that web host. Okay. So the web host is this structure of your program.cs is new in ASP.NET Core 2.0 if you've used 1x before this. And it's separated out, so mostly for tooling. So there is the program.cs and the startup CS when taken together, you can think of as the code-based configuration for your app. They tell your app how to start, what URL to listen on, what configurations files to load, what places to log to, all of this sort of information is all in here. And then if you're using something like Entity Framework, you also configure what database you're going to talk to in here, in your startup CS, and information such as that. And so if anything wants to know the full picture of your application, such as, since we mentioned Entity Framework, the Entity Framework tooling on the command line, it needs to be able to build your app up, get all the configuration, code base and otherwise, for your app, so that it can know everything about your application and do whatever it's going to do. Entity Framework migrations maybe might be an example of something that has to do this. So this build web host method is there by convention so that type of tooling can come and find it and run it to build up your web host, and then you look through and inspect your application and know how your application is structured. So you shouldn't really do anything in this method other than configuring your web host, which is why we chose to use this this funky new syntax here to kind of show you, help you down that path, guide you down that path of don't do anything other than play around with web host builder in here. You could change this to a normal method, it doesn't matter, but then tooling might execute it. And then Up here in Maine, we just run it. And when we call run, that is when you see this, you know, that's when this sort of stuff here happens, where it actually boots the web host, binds to a port, starts accepting HTTP requests from the browser to be able to return your content. Okay, so that's that. Now, the web host is the core of an ASP.NET Core application, center of an ASP.NET Core application. It is the thing that ties all of your configuration together and actually runs your app. Now, and this create default builder creates a thing called a web host builder. And the web host builder is how you build your web host. And it has a lot of defaults. If we mouse over it here, you can see in this remarks section, you probably won't be able to read this, but there's a like novel of text in here just describing all the things that that create default builder does for you. If you've used 1x previously, or 1.0, 1.1 or so such, then you will have seen pretty much everything that's in that create default builder method, but it would have been inside your application. It really just takes a lot of the defaults that we expect pretty much every ASP.NET Core application to use, puts them behind a method so you don't have to see them in your application unless you want to, and then you can change them by calling methods on the web host builder once you have come through here. And we'll talk more about that as we go. So now let's jump over to Startup CS. You can see just here, the very first thing we do once we have a web host builder is tell it to also go and use the startup, this class called Startup, in order to get some more configuration for itself. And so that Startup class is here in startup.cs. Now, there's some conventions here. The name Startup is just a convention that we use in our templates. It doesn't matter what it's called. I could come over here and make this, I don't know, Hanselman likes fancy pants, for example. And I could save that, and I could go over here, change my constructor, and come over here to program, change this here. This will work just as well as startup.cs. Doesn't matter. We tell what the type is here. However, this configure services method and configure method, their names are important. The type that you give us as the startup has to have, you know, these methods that are to configure your application. And if you go over and look in your web host builder, you can see it actually has a configure method and a configure services method, and they do exactly the same thing as what the configure services and configure method in Startup CS do. So Startup CS is just a nice way for you to encapsulate the configuration of services and middleware in a single class, as well as allow you to inject services into that class so that you can use them to then help with your configuration. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So actually, we'll talk about it right now. So one of the next most core pieces outside of web host and web host builder of your ASP.NET Core application is DI and IOC. There is dependency injection is kind of spread throughout the system, and you need to know at least a little bit about it to be able to understand some things that are going on. And the minimum amount that you can kind of need to know is that you can register things here in configure services. So you can go services.add, and any one of these add methods in here. See, all of these adds are from various ASP.NET Core things, Unity framework and features of ASP.NET Core or EF. And you can also add your own. So you could say like add transient, for example, of my own types. And anything that gets added here can then be accepted, just used anywhere in your ASP.NET Core application that is kind of DI aware. So, for example, the example that you can see here is this I configuration that I accept in my Hanselman likes fancy pants startup class is being added from DI. Now, there are a few services that are core that are always in the services collection. There is I configuration, there's I hosting environment. There is also always a logger factory and an I logger, right? Like that, right? So these three services are kind of always available all the time. You can always consume them, and we're going to talk about each of them as we go. But for now, let's just jump over to say index.cs over here. This is the code that gets executed on when I go to my homepage, right? So when I run my app. And I go to localhost 5000, that is my index page, and this code right here gets run, right? This list on get here will get run, okay? So when I do that, So this code here ran, right? This onget. And so what you can do is over here, I could create a constructor, I could call it index model. I could accept iConfiguration here, just as I could accept iConfiguration in my other startup class. If I resolve a namespace, and I can use it just like I could anywhere else. Right? And that's because it's in the I. So if I created my own type, say, I'm going to create an I email sender because I want to send an email when somebody does something on my site. I could create a class called email sender, implement all the logic in there that you need to send emails. I could add it in my configure services method. And then I could just, whenever I needed that anywhere, whenever I was in a page that was going to send an email, I could accept that in the constructor of my app or in a couple other ways as well, and then run it. Right, and use it. And then the code that needs to use the email sender doesn't have to know how to make the email sender, for example. Imagine that in my index.css over here, imagine I had to make my email sender. Right. So in here I had to say like, okay, I want to send an email whenever anybody goes here. So I'm going to say var sender equals new email sender, right? So now this class knows how to build an email sender. It has to. And that starts to potentially get complicated. Say the email sender needs iConfiguration because it needs to be able to get an SMTP server or something. Well, now then I need to also know how to make a configuration to be able to give to the email sender. And then if I ever want to test this class, it's difficult for me to kind of extract that code to make the email sender, because if I want to test my code, I don't want to actually send emails when I'm testing my code. I just want to like see whether or not the logic that I've written in there is correct. So I need to replace the email sender with some other email sender that doesn't do anything, right? And that's that type of pattern. This type of dependency injection pattern makes that type of code easy because you automatically write code that is friendly to unit testing, if that makes sense. Okay, so DI is kind of at the core of everything. Now, and there is a few default services that you can use. And we've mentioned all of them. So the first one that we're going to talk about, though, is in detail, is a hosting environment. So in here, in my console, you can see hosting environment, production. Now, that's because I've created my application and I'm running it, and it doesn't know, I haven't told it what environment I'm in. And the way that you do that in ASP.NET Core is with an environment variable. So if I set an environment variable called ASP.NET Core underscore environment equals development, right, and then I run my application, now my application is going to know that it's not in production mode, it's in some other mode called development. And the names of these things are just strings, they're just defaults. There's no real logic in the stack, there's no logic in the core of ASP.NET that knows about environments. Per se. There's some configuration. The reason that different things happen when you're in development mode or production mode is purely because of things that happen in Create Default Builder, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But for now, you can see that when I switched over to development mode, I started to get some different text in here. I've got some extra kind of verbosity, and that's because when I went into development mode, our loggers started to change. And if I go over here and start browsing around my app, I start getting a lot more log information in here, a lot more info logs that I wasn't getting before, and that's because of the way our app is configured, and we'll talk about that. If you're using Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac, typically you'll be in development mode all the time when you're in Visual Studio because it sets that up for you. But if you're just raw on the command line like I was, you might end up in production mode by default. That'll probably catch you out at some point. You'll wonder why you're not getting logs or something like that, so remember what we just did, if that happens. And so now, that's cool. So there's an environment variable called ASP.NET Core underscore environment. Whatever the value of that is what your environment you're in. But there's also a service. So in our startup CS over here, you can see the configure method is accepting this iHosting environment service. And it's using it to say, when is development, use the development exception page, otherwise go specifically to this error page that I've set up for you. So this is a way for you to, whilst you're in development, get some extra information about an error, but when you're not in development, you don't want to leak that information to everybody, so you want to display a nice, like, friendly error page, you want it to fit within the branding of your site, things like that. And this is development. All it is a convenient extension method that says, is the value of the ASP.NET Core environment variable the word development? And you don't have to use a development or production. There is three that we know about. We have extension methods for. We have is development, is production, or is staging. But otherwise, it's just a string, right? You can make up whatever environment you want and then use that everywhere. It's up to you when how you use the environment names. Okay? And now, okay, so that's the app hosting environment. You can accept this anywhere. It has a few other things in it. It has the application name, it has the content root and the web root, which are the content root is where your app is on the machine. The web root is where all of your JavaScript, CSS and stuff is. So if you ever need to like inspect those files or do something, you can use the app hosting environment. And then the next core service. So we talked about core services. We had hosting environment, configuration, logging. They're all things that are always available in DI. So let's move on from hosting environment to configuration. So I've accepted that this default app has accepted this iConfiguration type, and it's set it on a property. It doesn't actually use it anywhere in here, I believe. We mostly put it into the template so that you knew how to do it, and we expected you probably want to use it yourself at some point in here. But it shows that it's always available because to all of your application. And let's look at how you might change configuration. So the configuration system in ASP.NET Core is a key value pair based abstraction, which what that means is that configuration object, you can say configuration get, right? And you can give it a string, like a connection string, say. And then if there is a key called connection string somewhere in your config, I believe that's supposed to take a string, it doesn't look like it, then this will give you the value of the thing, right? Right? So that's how you can use it to just like grab the value, some value out of your config. And then what you do is in order to set up those key value pairs, you add a bunch of configuration sources. So what you can do is you can say, now because configuration and logging and hosting environment are all core services, it's difficult to configure them in configure services where you would normally configure a service because they're always available and you kind of need them often to configure services. So that means there are methods on the web host builder for you to help you configure configuration and to configure logging. So there's this configure app configuration, which is how you can add more or set what sources you want to use. So if in here, no semicolon there, if in here, if you go config builder and you say .add, so here is the way that you can add more keys into your config system to be able to get more sources of configuration. So you might add Azure Key Vault, and then that would load configuration from Key Vault that you set up and it would put them into your config object so that you could get secure kind of secret style safing in here. You might just add a JSON file or an XML file or an .ini file, right? Or environment variables, these are all built in. But then, so you might do something like config builder.add JSON file, and you might add like app settings.json, right? And now, this code says there is going to be a file called appsettings.json in my application, and it's going to have config in it. And if you look, there is a file called appsettings.json. It has some config in it that we'll talk about later. But then some of your config sources may be environment specific or something as well. So you can take this context object in here, and this context is the web host builder context, and it has things on it that you might need whilst doing this. So you can say, now I can say something like if context dot, one of the things that this has on it is hosting environment. Hosting environment dot is development, say, because we already looked at this code. This is exactly the same as the code we just saw in our startup CS. And then we can say config builder dot add, and then maybe we put app settings, maybe we'll put dot add JSON file. How's that? And then we'll put app settings dot development dot JSON. Right? So now what this says is add the app settings dot JSON. If it's development, add the development.json, overriding any keys that are in both. So the development wins when in development. Otherwise, only app settings gets applied. So this lets you do what our template does, which is override the default log levels with more information when in development. Otherwise, set it to warning, right? So this is a way that you can set up environment-specific configuration from your config files. And then this is actually mostly what the create default builder does for you. It does it a little bit more succinctly in that it actually does this, which is config builder, and then it uses like string interpolation to say this dot configuration dot environment dot hosting context dot name environment name dot JSON, and then it marks it as this. There's a bool here which says optional, and it makes it true, and that means that this file can, or the app settings.json has to exist, and if it's not there, this code will throw to say, hey, your app settings file is missing. This app settings.environmentname.json is not there. It's not mandatory, it's optional. So if it's not there, nothing will throw, it just won't be loaded. So, and this is roughly what the create default builder method does for you, which means if you went and create app settings.bar.json, and then you set your environment to bar, then it would get loaded when you're in the bar environment, right? And that's kind of scaffolded up for you in this create default builder method. Okay, hopefully that all makes sense. And then from there, there's also an option system. We won't talk much into this, but you can also then take that configuration object. You can create a C# type, just a standard class. And you can bind it to configuration, and then the keys map to the type, map to the property names, and then you get this nice strongly typed configuration that you can use for all of your settings and stuff that you want inside of your application. And those files are designed mostly for you. They have some logging stuff in them, which we're about to get into right now by default. And once again, that was created by Create Default Builder. Okay, any questions? Throw them at me and we can try and answer them if anybody's watching live. So, next. Next core service, we said hosting environment, we said configuration. Next core service is logging. So you can accept anywhere in your application. So for example, over here, I can accept an iLogger of Hanselman likes fancy pants, right? And I could accept this anywhere. I could accept this in my, you know, index pages or in my controllers if I'm doing the model view controller pattern or the web API kind of style. And then I can say logger here, can accept that, or can I? We don't have a namespace, we need the logging namespace, wrong resolve. Then I can say logger dot, let's say critical, and I'm gonna say that let's say log level. Let's look at our configuration file. Let's find a setting that we won't want to log. Let's say we want to log the log level, this default log level here. And you notice that this JSON file is kind of structured, it's all split up. So one way you can access this is with some conventions where you can say configuration, and you can say logging, log level, you can say logging, log level, default. And that'll get you the value of that key, and then we could say like log level in here, and that'll log it for us. Right? Make sense, I hope. .NET run. So this is a way that you can accept your logger anywhere in your application, and you can log to it. And so over here in our web host builder, you can configure logging. And once again, you can take a logger, not use configuration, this was supposed to be configure logging. And you can accept a logger factory in here. And you can say logger factory dot add. And then from here, you can add more log sources. Now, unlike configuration, the sources that you add here, the order that you add these sources isn't as important. The logging kind of goes to all of them. You just need to add all the ones that you want. All right? And by default, the configure default logging, the create default builder adds console, it adds debug, right? And I think that's all, console and debug, we can check. And it adds, calls this add configuration method. And what this add configuration method does, we could call it here if we wanted to, it accepts the configuration object that we made, the iConfiguration, and it then the logger factory looks at these log settings here to control what in levels of logs get logged. So if without us doing anything, like we can do what our what the create default builder does, which would be we need to accept the context in here, and then you have logger factory, and then we can say context.configuration, say something like that, and then we can say logger factory dot add console, and we can say logger factory dot add debug. We might need to get like a config section in here, which I'm probably not going to get time to talk about, but it's roughly that. Add console and add debug. And then if we did this, then our logs would go to the console log. If we had a debugger attached, like in Visual Studio, they would go to the debug log inside VS, so you can see it inside the Visual Studio window. But if you're here like us, then you only have console. And then if we go back to where we ran .NET Run, you can now see this critical log message from the Hanselman Likes Fancy Pants class, and it says debug. And it says debug because debug is the value of our the default log level in the in the development environment, because earlier on we changed our development environment over to changed our environment over to development. So it's loading this development.json file. Okay, and so if we take away all of this, so did I leave my app running? I did, yes. Okay, so now when I go to say my homepage, I get this these information logs in here. Right, probably difficult to see because let me open up this and then close this. Right, I get these debug logs. So because I'm in the development environment and we set our log level to information. But if I come over here and then I say, okay, let's just change all of these to like warning instead. Right, and so now I'm only going to get log levels of warning, which is similar to my app settings one. And if I do that, and then I start browsing around, I'm not getting any more log statements because I've changed my app. See, this would scroll if I was getting more. App to say, stop sending me anything, because all those info log labels are information and they don't get levels warning. If I highlight this text and then I come over here level and I browse around, well, then you'll see the text is like way up here because I was getting lots more log statements coming in. So that's how on the fly you can kind of turn up and down your logging. It's really important. So there's some settings that you need in config files, some settings that you want in code. In general, code in your startup CS and your program main, really good for discovering things that you need. You're getting IntelliSense, you can get the compiler to help make sure you're doing the right thing, things like that. But there are a lot of things you want to change on the fly whilst you're in some environment to work out what's going on. For example, log levels are one of those. You want to be able to turn it up, get a bunch of extra logs, turn it down again, and things like that. That's why by default, we now create default builder, we set that up for you. And once again, this is only in the create default builder where all of this happens. If you don't like this kind of setup, if you don't call create default builder, you can put together this all of this the way that you want. Okay, it's create default builder that sets up the log files and sets adds all the default log levels and things like that. So you can do that. So does logger service or something similar exist in console slash other project types is a question from Alex. Thank you very much, Alex. You may be the only person watching. Well done. So you can use, the iLogger is a net standard like package. So you can use it in any other like net standard kind of friendly project type. It will work. It's just a straight up library. It's not tied to ASP.NET Core in any real way. But most frameworks and setups have their own something to log to or some library that you can log with. So you don't necessarily have to, depending upon what project type you actually are in. If it's just a console app, maybe it's what you want. If you're in like a .NET framework application, then you'll have a bunch of stuff already. Yeah, so it depends on your project type, but you can use that this exact logger service system that I'm showing you right now with any .NET standard kind of compliant .NET framework version or project type. The The other thing about loggers, when we looked at the configure logging method, is there's a lot of other logging systems from other people out there that can plug into it. Serilog, for example, there's a few listed on the GitHub page, and there's, I think there might be listed in the docs in docs.asp.net, where you can plug in other logging providers. So Serilog is the example that I use most of the time because they have a very big set of providers. So if there's a provider that's not in the box, because there's not very many that we ship, we only ship a few, but there are lots more out there from Nlog and Serilog and people like that. And a lot of those you can plug in here in various ways, and there's links around. If you search for those, you should be able to find them easily enough. And that's how you would get, you know, rolling files or log to Azure Kiva, or log to Azure Blob Storage or something like that, is you would pull in one of those packages and then consume and then do it that way, because we don't ship one ourselves. Because they already exist and they're already great. Okay, so that makes sense. Now, we've talked about some of the default services. We talked about DI, we talked about hosting environment, we talked about configuration, we talked about logging. So then let's go and take a little bit of a dive over here into the configure method. We've talked about program main, we've talked about create default builder a bit, and soon we might go in and actually look at the source code of that and show you exactly what all that does. The last thing that we haven't really mentioned much is this configure method in here, right? And so what this configure method's doing in this application builder, this app type, this is the configuration for how you handle requests to your application. Most of the stuff we've talked about so far are just kind of configuration and setting up services that are available, logging systems, setting all of that up so that's available for your application. This method right here, configure, is how you can use all of that to accept a request from, say, a browser or some client, handle it, and then return something, right? This is the core of this is what your application really does whenever anybody tries to do anything. And it does that via middleware. So every one of these use methods, and use methods is a convention that we put on the extension methods for this iApplication Builder to say, you know, this is some middleware that you're going to use in your middleware pipeline. So each line here is one piece of middleware that gets added to the request pipeline. And the way this works is that a HTTP request comes into your application. It goes through every single piece of middleware until one after another, until something handles it, basically, something returns. And then it goes back to the user. If it goes all the way through that list and it gets to the very bottom, like if it gets through use MVC and still nothing has handled it, then we set the status code to 404, like we don't know what this thing is, and then we go back all the way up. Can you explain how DI scopes services? This is another question from T3. Can you explain how DI scopes services, and in this case, making them global to your app? Okay, yeah, sure, we can talk about that a little bit. So when you're configuring services, there's a few things you can do. You can say add singleton, for example. You can say services.add transient, and you can say services.add scoped, right? So each of these methods, depending on which one, so if we make email sender, like if we said email sender, we talked about this earlier. So if we did this, is how you would register this if this type existed in our system. Which one of these you call controls how the lifetime effectively of what this type is. So if you say add singleton, there is one email sender, a single email sender everywhere in your application. Every time you use an email sender, it's the same one everywhere, with one caveat. But transient means that email sender is new. Every time anybody asks for one, they get their own. And scoped is you get one perp. Now, the default scope that most of you really care about and will worry about is scope, so you'll get kind of per request. And that's a DI scope for each request. It's possible you could create some. You can say parts of subsystems and things could do that, but in general, think of it mostly for free mode of request. Hopefully that answers your question. Tweet me or ask another question if it doesn't. Backing up a bit, Bauer, this is a different question from Chris. I've heard NPM is the new front, still seems to be default in the tooling. Which should one be targeting? Makes you happy. Okay? It doesn't really matter. You can choose NPM, choose Bower, it's fine. Bower happens to be the one that we scaffold in our tooling right now, but it doesn't really matter. Feel free to use NPM. You're right that most people in that kind of community, in that space, tend to be going to NPM. If you care about that sort of stuff, go to NPM. I'm not sure change Bower in the short term. We might, we may, maybe we won't use Bower. I'm not sure. But yeah, feel free to use whatever you want. Doesn't really, they're just there. We chose Bower to put into the templates because when we did all of these templates, Bower was the best way to get the most up-to-date versions of all of those packages all the time. Right? And we'll re-evaluate that periodically if Bower turns out to be not that anymore, right? Hope answers that question. If not, I can talk to you about it more. We're at middleware. Okay, so each one of these is middleware. Request comes in, it goes through all the middleware. Every middleware gets kind of a chance to say, yeah, I handle this, or no, I don't. They see the request as it comes in, and then they can also see everything as it comes back out. So they can either expect and do something on the way in, and they can expect and do something on the way out. Like that, what we're gonna do here is we're gonna use a thing called inline middleware, and we're gonna say context, and thank you for helping me so much. Autocomplete, say next, okay? And we're gonna go, yeah. Right, we're just gonna make this kind of inline lambda syntax. This is just and then we're gonna make this async, because what we're gonna do in here is say await, and we're gonna say context.response.write async, and we're gonna write hello.netconf. Right, something like that. And this we need to resolve. And then we might return, because we probably should. And then, wrong button, control tilde, .NET run. Now, what this is going to do is, so my request is going to come in. I'm in development mode, so the developer exception page basically wraps my everything else in an exception happens, it catches it, and then it just pays an error page for me. And then it's going to come in here, and what this middleware does is say, write hello.netconf, and that's it, every single request. Which means every time I go to my application now, it's always going to say hello.netconf. It doesn't matter what I do, or where I go, or what I say, or anything. It's always just going to say hello.netconf. Right? And that's because I haven't put any conditions in here. I've just said, everybody return hello.netconf. Dave, I'll answer your question. I'll come back to it after I finish this middleware thing, and then I'll talk a little bit more about it just to continue the flow. So await context.response.write async. So we could do things like say if, you know, context.request.path say equals maybe conf. Maybe we could do this, right? It's just code, so we can write whatever we want. Do that. And then what if we said, okay, if it's conf, I want to go do this response.write, but if it's anything else, to flow. Well, that's what this next method is for, right? Next is call the next thing and let it handle it and then go on and so on and so forth. So now, if we run our application again, it should, when we go to /conf, say hello conf, and if we don't say that, then it should return our normal app. Right? And look at that. So our application works, and then if we go to /conf, it says hello.netconf, right? Because our inline middleware is doing that. And this is not how you would like handle path. Like, you probably don't want middleware like this if you can avoid it. But it gives you the idea, which is a middleware is just code, some C#, which has the HTTP context, and it can decide to do things as a request is coming in. And then I could, for example, after I awaited next, I could then look at the response again. I could say if context.response or something, .something, right? Like check it and do something to it on the way back out. I could try catch, right? So we talked about the diagnostics middleware. I could do things like this and say try catch exception EX, and then in here I could be like do something different, right? I could redirect you somewhere, or I could do something, do whatever I feel appropriate, right? So middleware, and then the key thing about middleware is that this piece of like code here, this inline middleware, does not know about any of the other pieces of middleware in this pipeline. All it does is say, all it knows about is itself and what it has to do. And it also, the other key thing is the order of these is super important, right? If you have something that handles a request to a static file before it gets to here, that static file is already handled. It'll never get to the use static files middleware. This use static files middleware is what returns your CSS and your JavaScript and stuff. If you don't have this middleware in your pipeline, nothing knows how to return JavaScript. So no JavaScript gets returned, right? No files get returned. If you don't call use MVC, there's no MVC. You don't have routes, you don't have pages, you don't have controllers or anything like that, right? If you want to just raw write an app that does basic stuff, you could just not have very much middleware in here. If you want auth, if let's say that you want auth to happen, but you want not for static files, but for everything else, then you can kind of add auth middleware after static files, say. Order is super important. Typically for middleware, you will create a class and that encapsulates how all your middleware works, and then an extension method like these ones. And these extension methods use static files and so on. They're just a method that adds that class to the middleware pipeline if you're going to actually do it yourself. And there's lots of examples in the ASP.NET Core repos. Okay. Let's take a step back from middleware, back to the Bower versus NuGet, Bower to the package manager discussion. Bower versus NuGet, how do you differentiate? Bower for client-side stuff, most generally. The simple answer here is use Bower for CSS, JavaScript libraries typically, and NuGet typically for like .NET stuff. And that's not strictly true because, for example, there's a lot of TypeScript definitions on NuGet, they're also on Bower. The real distinction is really just who uses it. Like how they work is a little bit different. Bower is far more integrated into GitHub. It's focused on content stuff files, on JavaScript and such. So you won't find like .NET libraries there, for example. You'll find all those on NuGet.org. And that's kind of basically the definition. The simple answer is you get static file JavaScript and stuff from Bower and .NET and stuff from NuGet. It's a bit more nuanced than that. It's not like there's a lot more details to dive into it, but for a fairly kind of simple put them in their place in your head, that's the one. From Charles, how do you inject multiple applications DB context in startup? So I'm not 100% sure of the APIs that you were the way that you do this with EF, with Entity Framework Core, but you have a use, you're saying that add DB context method here, and can you call this twice and then accept the right one? And what I want to say is the way that you would do this is just say context one, and then like do the configuration for that, this is not enough. And then the same thing for context two, and then just accept either context one or context two, wherever you want to go. But I'm not 100% sure of that, so you should ask on the EF, look at the like EF docs to make sure. Or if you tweet me, I'll find out, I'll make sure and I'll respond to you. Just tweet me to remind me to go and check in with the EF guys to make sure there's no problems with that flow, okay? Does that make sense? Hopefully that makes sense. Ask another clarifying question or talk to me in Twitter if it doesn't quite answer what you were after. Okay, and so we talked about middleware. So we'll quickly do a couple more things. We don't have very much time left. So the last couple of things I wanted to do was I'm going to type, let's open up the file explorer here, .NET publish-o /out. Okay, so once you have your application in Glorious and it's the next, going to make somebody $1 million for sure, you want to publish it. And so what publish does is it takes your dev layout, kind of the layout that you run from on your development, the layout that you want to run kind of in production. And so it compiles all your views so that your Razor CHTML and stuff is compiled into assembly. So you don't have to wait for that at runtime. If you like to have your Razor views on the tweak them or edit them on live or anything like that, you can turn that off in the CS prod, compile it to a DLL to speed up the initial load of that page. Conf.dll. there's some configuration files and stuff have come along with me, and I have all my static content in that stub. And so this folder on its own, if I copy and paste this out folder anywhere, it has .NET on it, it can run with only what's inside that out folder it puts in. And then I can type .NET, netconf, app will run when I'm inside the out directory. So that's the way that you publish and package this app. If you're in Visual Studio, you can right click on the web application and click publish, and that does your website or so on and so forth. I think Visual Studio for Mac has the same thing, but I haven't tried it yet. So that's publishing, getting your application up to a server so you can run it. That's what the publish verb is all about. And then, yeah, one of the things that gets people a lot is they try and say like .NET run netconf.dll, which isn't what you want to do. You just type .NET. Okay. Cool. Is it difficult to migrate from the applications to the latest version? Depends on what you're doing. So if you're using kind of vanilla MVC, like if you're not kind of doing lots of work to play with customizing MVC and replacing types or doing anything fancy, then it's probably fairly okay as long as all of the types, especially on 2.0 where we've significantly increased the surface area of the stack. If you are playing around with heavily customizing MVC, there's a pretty good chance that the way that you could do that with a new MVC is different and you'll have to go on and change that. But for the most part, if you're kind of fairly vanilla-y, then it shouldn't be too difficult. So it kind of depends, as unfortunately the answer. That I can't, without more details, it's hard to say. We did have an intern who started with us, and the first task was to take an ASP.NET book and build, and I hadn't used ASP.NET at all. This was early in ASP.NET Core. And she went and followed the book and made a blog. It was a book that tells you how to make an ASP.NET blog. And she had accidentally created a core project instead of one of the older MVC version projects, which is the book was telling you how to make an older MVC app. And she didn't know until she got significantly in, because the code still just worked the way that it was described in the book. So that anecdote perhaps gives you some extra information. Okay, and so I have 3 minutes left. So my 3 minutes left, unless somebody asks some more questions, we're going to reveal, I guess. We're going to go GitHub, ASP.NET, meta packages. Oh, there's a couple of other things I guess I should talk about. We're going to go to the web host type. Right, and scroll down here. Now this meta package, there's two important things with the meta package. In order to get this web host create default builder, you need at least the Microsoft.ASP.NET Core package or the Microsoft.ASP.NET Core.org package. If you used ASP.NET in prior to 2.0, then we didn't really have this package, and you depended on all the different pieces individually. You can still do that if you want, but we have some the opinion layers, like the create default builder, where we put a bunch, give you a bunch of default config providers and stuff. They all happen in meta packages, so that the core is not opinionated in any ways, at least in the ways that the meta package are in terms of config sources and such. Because I'm using the all meta package, that's why my publish output was really small and it didn't have much in it. It's also why I had like every API in IntelliSense. So certainly while you're learning, use the all meta package. I actually think you should just use the all meta package pretty much all the time. It just gives you the one version number to worry about, gives you all the IntelliSense, and everything is great. If you're someone who really cares about only depending upon explicitly what you need, so the reason the all meta package is fine is because when you publish, we trim out everything that was in the all package, so it's not in your publish output. So you get the advantages of having it in the IDE without actually having to copy it to the server or anything like that. It's pretty great. And this web host create default builder stuff is in, there's another meta package not called all, called ASP.NET Core. That's where this create default builder is. And if we have a quick look through this create default builder, you can understand a lot of this code now. It's calling configure app configuration. It's adding some config files. It's adding user secrets, which is just another way of getting configuration into your app. It's adding environment variables. It's configuring logging, just like we talked about configuring logging. It's adding some IIS integration, which does nothing if you're not behind IIS, but if you are behind IIS, makes everything work. And it does some work to help you validate DI scopes when you're in a development environment, right? So you can understand all of this now, and potentially, hopefully, like once you play with this a little bit, you'll understand it at least. We've explained what pretty much all this does in the previous versions. I wanted to show you this to show you there's not that much magic. If you go and look around, you can find all the code that makes everything run, and it's possible to find it and understand it completely on GitHub. One last question by the look of it. It looked like there was add MVC, add MVC core. What's the difference? So the difference is how many services get added. So if you call add MVC core, you can do kind of web API type stuff, but you don't really have Razor, for example, the UI parts of MVC. So that MVC core is where you want to kind of build an ASP.NET core application, you know, and you don't need all the extra bits that are outside of core. Mostly, you typically use it when doing like an API with no UI, is the kind of canonical example, if that makes sense. Okay, and I believe that's completely up for time. Thank you very much for watching. I'll check back on the comments of this recorded video a few times, so if you want to add comments there or tweet me or anything. And thank you so much for watching. I hope you found this valuable. Enjoy the rest of .NET Conf.